past 5 years has contributed more than $100,000 to the United Farm Workers. But this isn't a struggle of dollars. If it's a struggle for money, the other side's going to win. They have 32, 35, 40 million in the treasury. But this union has values that money can never buy, and you're going to win with the values. You're going to win with those values. Now, there are three reasons why this union's going to win. First, because it's a people's fight. It's more than a trade union dispute. We know that Cesar Chavez and the leadership here speaks for liberal America, speaks for the poor in the urban slums, speaks for the dispossessed wherever they are in this nation. And the solidarity that has been evident from the beginnings of this union is a reflection of that truth. You speak not only for those in the organization, you speak for all who have been denied their proper place in the American system, who have been denied their share of wealth in the abundance of the richest nation of history. And there is no organization against us. There is no power on earth against us that is going to stop a people's movement. And because this is a people's movement, something more than a union, yes, a people's movement, it will prevail. And secondly, it's a socially responsible, socially directed union. This retirement center reflects that. The union knows this. The union movement begins with wages, hours, and conditions of work. Men and women don't join unions to reform the nation, to reform society, reform the world. They get in for wages, hours, security. But the union, this union, knows that you can't solve the great critical problems of America at the bargaining table alone. The problems of education, housing, health, racial equality, and peace must all be negotiated and won in areas beyond the bargaining table. They must be negotiated and won in Sacramento and in Washington, in a Washington free of the scandal and the shame of a Nixon and a people's Washington. Well, social unionism distinguishes this union from its opposition in the great struggle that now goes on in a jurisdictional sense. And there is a third reason why the farm workers will prevail. They don't stand alone. They have with them the national AFL-CIO. Tom Donahue, George Meany's executive assistant, is here today and will speak to you. The largest free trade union movement in the world. You have the state movement, the various councils throughout the state, the United Auto Workers, the International Longshoremen and Warehousemen Union. You have with you the trade union strength and solidarity of all who believe in unionism, who are unshackled by jurisdictional discipline. Now we face the problem of the Teamsters that has been alluded to. There is only one answer to the Teamster dispute with the farm workers, and that is a united labor movement. One movement, because we have only one common interest. The distinctions that separate the Teamsters from the farm workers are man-made, artificial distinctions. They do not exist in the nature of things. We face an employer society that in this valley and everywhere it prevails exists not for the community good, not for the service it might give to men and women of the nation, but for one reason only, and that is for profit. And any force or any element that interferes with the employer's measure of profit will be destroyed by their influence in Washington.
Brothers and sisters, hermanos y hermanas de la ciudad de Washington, el asistente ejecutivo del presidente de la Confederación Americana de Trabajadores, George Meany. Brothers and sisters, the executive assistant to the FLCO president, George Meany. Brother Thomas R. Donahue.
Thank you, Cesar, and thank you all. I'm delighted to be here and delighted to join with you on this joyous occasion. I kind of feel, though, that this meeting needs one more speaker, not very much. And there's a story, you know, about but what I must do, I must speak, and that's my responsibility. And you have to listen to one more speech, and that's your responsibility. And there's a story about the priest and the chief of police in a little town up in New England. And the chief came to the priest one day and he said, "Father, you got to do something about those people. When they come to church on Sunday, they just park their car any place they please. I can't move traffic through the town. Would you make sure they only park on the left-hand side of the street? Would you make sure they park in the side street?" And so forth. The priest thought a while and he said, "Father, Chief, I can't help you at all." He said, "I have enough trouble to exercise my responsibility to get the good people to come out and pray with me on Sunday morning. You worry about where they park their cars." It became a very bitter feud between the two of them, and they didn't speak to one another for 4 or 5 weeks. And one morning the priest woke up and he looked out on the rectory lawn, and there was the carcass of a dead jackass out there. And he went to the phone and he called up the chief and he said, "Chief, there's a dead jackass out on my lawn." And the chief said, "What do you want me to do about it, Father?" He said, "You remember about that division of responsibility?" He said, "The burying the dead, that's your bag, isn't it?" And the priest thought a moment. He said, "Yes, yes, you're right. I just thought I'd call and notify the next of kin." Caesar, I'm delighted to be here. And I want to note that I claim some kinship with the Farm Workers Union over a good number of years. I was looking at Dolores Huerta here earlier, and the fact is that I had the pleasure of being one of the labor people who served in the labor department in the last administration. And I came out in 1966 or 67 because we tried to call a meeting with the growers and the farm workers to see if we could settle a strike that was going on then. And we had a meeting down in Bakersfield, and Dolores came down with a negotiating committee. We had a very good meeting. The only thing wrong with the meeting was the growers didn't show up. And the situation really hasn't changed all that much. I see Gilbert Padilla in Washington. He's in and out of my office about once a week, I think, looking for some little help or other. And we do whatever we can to help him. Let me just say that I'm delighted to be here, delighted to join with you in the dedication of this village. That fact, the existence of this village, is really one of the finest expressions of the Farm Workers Union and one of the finest expressions of the trade union movement, because that's what we're all about. What we're all about is somehow trying to make life a little bit better for other people, and that's what the Agbayani Village is going to do here. And it's fine, as Jack Henning says, that you honor the people who were at the roots of this union and helped so much in its building. I want to officially bring you the greetings of President Meany, Secretary-Treasurer Kirkland, of all of the AFL-CIO, because all of the AFL-CIO stands united behind the Farm Workers Union. And I'm delighted, as we came up the road today, to see all the unions out on the road with signs saying that they support the farm workers on the back of their cars, and to see this kind of a demonstration here today for the farm workers. I want to go back east and report this kind of help, this kind of solidarity for the Farm Workers Union. Let me just say a couple of words on where we're at in the, not in the celebration, which I hope we can get back to for the rest of the day, but let me say a couple of words about where we're at in the struggle, because that's the overwhelmingly important thing that we're about right now. I hope that I can come back here sometime, and nobody's going to say viva la huelga, viva la causa. I hope we're going to say to hell with the strike and to hell with the boycott, and we're going to say viva la victoria and nothing else. And I'm going to come back for that. Caesar, I demand an invitation. We'll be here for that meeting. You'll all be here. What's happened, really, in the California fields last year and this year? Well, what's really happened is the worst raid and the worst ripoff, the most immoral act in probably all of American trade union history. The conduct of the Teamsters Union in moving in on top of the farm workers and denying the people in the fields representation by the Farm Workers Union is something nobody can excuse. No matter how much the Teamsters spend on their public relations firms, no matter how much money they move in trying to improve their image, it's not going to help. All the PR in the world isn't going to hide that labor contractor. And all the PR in the world isn't going to hide the disgraceful things that have been done to the Farm Workers Union. It's a strange, strange thing that's going on in that union. The alliance is made between a strong and vital union and the growers of California. And with it, you see the coming in of all sorts of other people and all sorts of other alliances being created. You look and you see the new general counsel of the Teamsters Union, Chuck Colson, comes out of the White House. You see now that the Teamsters, according to one of your papers, have retained Lynn Nofziger. I don't have to tell a California audience anything about Lynn Nofziger and what he represents. Now, according to a Scripps Howard piece just the other day, the Teamsters have now retained a new public relations firm by the name of Wagner and Baruti. Well, who are Wagner and Baruti? Wagner is the former administrative assistant to Senator Barry Goldwater. Baruti's an even more interesting man. Baruti has a brother who replaced Chuck Colson at the White House. He's now the new Chuck Colson. Baruti is the guy who Chuck Colson called up and said, we need $5,000 for the campaign. That's the $5,000 that was put up as front money for the raid on Dr. Fielding's office. It later was given back to Baruti out of the milk fund money. That's an incredible collection of characters. What's a union doing with people like that? You know that line, what's a nice girl like you doing in a place like this? What's a union doing with that kind of people? Well, one of the things they're doing is they're trying to clean up the story. And that's what all the public relations is about. And that's why you have to keep on telling the story, and that's why the boycott has to tell the story. Because what's happening now is that, you know, we worked long and hard with CSER and with all of your representatives through a long series of meetings trying to settle this dispute with the Teamsters. And we had an agreement. Let there be no mistake. We had an agreement under which the Teamsters said they would get out of the fields, and they recognized that what they had done shouldn't have been done, and they'd get out of representing the farm workers and leave the UFW alone. Well, what happened next, as you know, is that Mr. Fitzsimmons reneged on that agreement. Well, they have to clean up that story. So first, Mr. Fitzsimmons said there was no agreement. I don't know how he can say that, but that was the first line, there was no agreement. He said he obviously forgot that he talked to Mr. Meany on the phone, and he authorized Mr. Meany to release a statement to the press saying that there was an agreement in principle, and all had to be done was have the lawyers look at the language. What really happened is that Dusty Miller, the Secretary Treasurer of the Teamsters, said, this is terrible. We could be sued for non-performance of those contracts. And they wanted the AFL-CIO to indemnify them. Well, we had a simple answer for that. The contracts were born in sin and corruption, and they were not legal contracts, and nobody could enforce them, and we weren't going to indemnify the Teamsters. So later, they changed the story. And they said, well, the agreement was kind of talked about, but never really implemented. And then in a meeting, an appearance on Meet the Press just 2 weeks ago, Mr. Fitzsimmons said, well, if the truth were known, and I'm not sure how we'll get that from him, but he said, if the truth were known, it's Meany that broke the agreement. Well, we'd love to know the truth of that one, because there just isn't any truth in it. Finally, now, the PR firms have Mr. Fitzsimmons saying that the Teamsters are in the fields to preserve democracy. Now, that's got to be the best line I've heard lately and one of the hardest ones to sell. I suspect that the Teamsters in the California fields came to democracy about the same time Colson came to religion. They came out for democracy after they got finished ripping off the farm workers. He came to religion somewhat later. Let me just talk a minute about where do we go from here. I don't think all the PR money of the Teamsters is going to clean up their image. And I think we're going to win. I think that you're going to have, as you do, and you'll continue to have, the united support of the American labor movement. And the boycott is going to succeed. I was at a meeting. It's going to succeed, I say, for two reasons. One, because the AFL-CIO is going to support it, and because people like Jack Henning and Sig Arowitz and all the other trade union people you heard from here today are going to go back in their communities and continue to do the things they've been doing to support you and to support the boycott. It's going to succeed for a second reason, and that is that there's a story. I was at church last Sunday, and after the mass in our parish, they had a Mexican breakfast that Gilbert and Esther Padilla had arranged. And I went there and went for the Mexican breakfast and went to hear Gilbert's speech for the 55th time. But I sat patiently through it. And there were about, I guess, 100 people, 100, 120 people in this church hall. And they listened. And they understood what Gilbert Padilla was saying. They liked Esther's food. And they went away from that meeting convinced that they weren't going to be fooled by any PR campaign, that they were going to support you, support the Farm Workers Union, and that they were going to be a help in this boycott campaign. So we're going to win the boycott. I must confess to you, I occasionally get disheartened when a lot of these things happen. And when I get kind of downhearted, I call up Gilbert or Caesar, because I've never talked to anybody who's a greater optimist than either one of these two. So I say to you, it is going to succeed. We're going to win. And I want to come back here, Caesar, once more, when we say to hell with the huelga, to hell with the boycott, and we say, Viva la Union,